Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. According to the U.S. Census, African Americans and Hispanics accounted for just 4.7% of the population of Barnstable County and 6.2% of the population in Dukes County. Despite this low representation in the general population, people of color are represented in many facets of the arts community on the Cape and Islands. This morning, we explore the experience of artists of color on the Cape and Islands. How does living here influence their work? How is their work received by the greater community? And how is art education shaping the next generation of artists of color? We have a number of artists as guests this morning, but we'd also like to hear from you. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And to start out the conversation, we welcome Lauren Wolk, Associate Director of the Cultural Center of Cape Cod. Morning, Lauren.
Good morning, Mindy.
All right, Lauren, the motto of the Cultural Center is "All the Arts for All of Us." Tell us more about the work and mission of the Cultural Center.
Well, that sums it up pretty well. We respond to the community, and we try to include all artists of all stripes, all people who want to be involved in the arts, young, old, all colors, all ethnicities, all interests, all abilities and incomes. It's a very democratic place, and we find that because we are as inclusive as we can possibly be, the place is very, very dynamic. There's always something interesting going on, and I simply can't understand why any arts organization or any organization, period, would want to limit the diversity that they experience or limit the people who participate in their activities. We're stronger and better because we're inclusive. We also strongly believe that the arts are a universal language, that there are many, many gaps in the world that account for the violence we experience, the misunderstandings, and the inability to get along. Arts are bridges over the gaps. And although some arts, like literary arts, may need a little help with translation, the themes that writers write about are universal. And music, visual art, dance, theater, they're all speaking a universal language.
Yeah.
And good artists are creating art that reflects their feelings, which are also universal. Fear, hopefully joy and hope as well, but anger and disappointment, conflict, all those things are universal. So we're just all one great, big, beautiful ball of confusion.
And I should say, the amount of things that go on there. How many different exhibitions do you have a year? There's classes, there's artwork available.
We do. The building is used over 900 times in a given year. Plus, we have over 80 exhibits in a given year. Mm-hmm. So, and that's everything from small meetings to large festivals and private and public events. So we have a very hard time saying no to anybody. We are a community center as much as an arts center, but our focus is always on culture. And we're building a new education wing so we can do an even better job of including anybody who wants to learn and participate in any kind of art.
Yeah. And we should say, as you said, artists of all abilities, established and emerging, you have everybody coming through those doors.
We do. We frequently do programs with people with special needs as well. We work a lot with youth at risk. We work with seniors. We work with anybody who wants to be in our building or partner with us to do work outside of our building, often in the schools and other organizations that serve.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's bring some artists into the conversation. Joining us in our studio in Woods Hole, Carl Lopes, a painter and visual arts director at Barnstable High School. Good morning.
Good morning, Mindy.
All right, and on the phone, Joe Diggs, also a painter who lives in Osterville. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
All right, Carl, for listeners not familiar with your work, you brought in a piece. How do you describe this?
Well, my work is very geometric. For years, I just worked out of my mind's eye and worked with forms. I trained in school as a realist, but I changed directions because of just where my heart and my creative imagination was telling me to go. And in the last 5 years, I've really taken an interest in African culture. I'm Cape Verdean as far as my ethnicity, and that's a group of islands about 300 miles off the coast of Africa. So I've always been interested, probably like Picasso was, in the simplicity of form regarding African masks. And I've always collected I'll say rather inexpensive African masks that are in my studio. Mm. And one day I just decided to try that image with my geometry, and I just fell in love with the fact that it had a personality.
Yeah.
It took on a new feeling, a new vibe. And I started working with much stronger colors, and my friend Joe Diggs here helped me learn how to pour the poly resin on top to give it that liquid glass type look. And I started using holographic papers, and the public started to really take hold of my work and show a much stronger interest and response to it.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Thank you.
We'll have some links up on our website so you can see some of our artist's works a little bit later. All right, Joe, you're also a painter, but you work in a very different from Carl. So how do you describe your work?
My work is abstract work based on departure from landscapes. I live in Austerville, and I live on three ponds. Well, I actually live on Micah's Pond in Austerville, so it's a lot of it's derived from the landscape. And actually, I was fortunate enough. I graduated from Barnstable High School, and in between going to college and starting my career in art. In college, I was fortunate enough to work with Carl, so we have a long history of working together. So I've been very, he's been very important to my career, my development.
Yeah.
And also Lauren, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Now, Carl mentioned how his ethnic background's affected his art. How has your ethnic background influenced your art?
It has. I'm half Cape Verdean and African American. It's influenced me in a lot of different ways that aren't directly at you, Mindy. They come from the fact that my grandfather was a businessman in the area, and a lot of my work, the reason why I'm living here is because of him. So there's a lot of reasons like that.
Yeah,
that inform my reasons to make art.
Yeah, Carl, how has living here on the Cape influenced your work?
Well. When I first started teaching, which was actually 35 years ago, I wasn't in love with being in the classroom, but I loved the Cape. And what I loved about the Cape was I found it to be a little bit of the metropolitan in the country. I just found that there was a lot of music, there were a lot of theater groups, a lot of arts groups, a lot of galleries, and many more artists than I ever imagined. And I said, I like this place. I think I'm going to stay here. And after about 3 years of teaching, I realized that was my calling. And the job became fun once I gave up the ghost and said, this is what I've meant to do. And the two have worked totally hand in hand. I'm a better artist because of being an art educator, and I'm a much better art educator because of being an artist. Mm. And the Cape has been very supportive. At Barnstable High School, we have a wonderful art program, and it's supported very well by the community and by the school system and the school committee, because the arts are so strong on Cape Cod. How could we not have schools? That don't have a top-notch arts program.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we find, Joe, here is a lot of people, especially visitors, come in. There's seascapes are nice, but I mean everything can't be seascapes. What's been the response to your work here on the Cape, Joe?
Oh, the response has been it's been good actually. The history of the Cape and with the arts is so deep that there's many layers of art appreciators here as well as artists. So because you happen to fall in the lineage of great artists ahead of you, there's a lot of understanding of what's going on. So that's what makes it a powerful place to actually work.
Mm-hmm. What about Carl? What about your response to your work?
Well, the response to my work has been very strong. There have been years where I haven't sold much here on the Cape because of not being kind of your Cape Cod type artist, regarding the landscape or the still life work or even portrait work. But, I always stood out like a sore thumb when I had my works in shows during my younger years, because I was probably one of the few that was doing geometric work. But that started to draw people's attention. And as my work improved over the years and it evolved, people would follow my work and start to buy and collect my work. And then about 5 years ago, instead of me going out and looking for shows to be in, mostly 100% of the shows that I'm in now has been because of invitation. People in galleries calling me and saying, we'd like to have your work in this show, or we'd like to give you a solo show. And so on. So the arts community has been very supportive of me, and I think it's due to the nature of our community and the strong arts involvement. But also, every artist works very hard in his or her studios, and I think over time it does pay off, especially if you're dedicated to your own inner feelings and creativity.
Yeah, Lauren, Carl's bringing up a really good point. When you look at the number of artists that we have here on the Cape and Islands and the quality of the work. It's amazing.
It is extraordinary. And there is more diversity than you might think. In the summertime, if you go from gallery to gallery, you see, as we were saying, more marsh scenes and seascapes and sailboats and lighthouses than you can count. And there, many of them are just glorious and wonderful. And then you see a piece that Joe Diggs or Carl Opes or Richard Neal or Jackie Reeves or any of the other more contemporary artists are producing, and they're instantly identifiable. That's mm-hmm. a Carl Opes, or mm-hmm. that's a Joe Diggs, or that's a Richard Neal. And these pieces tell stories. These pieces are, it's like the artist has taken his or her heart out and brain out and funked it right down on the canvas or on the board or in the music or the dance or whatever it is. The artists who really pour themselves into their work are the ones, I think, who are creating work that will last, that will have an impact on those who come after mm-hmm. us, and who honestly ought to be in collections. People are buying art, not the way they used to. Hopefully they will again buy more art. And when they do, I have to believe that they will be looking for pieces that speak to them, mm-hmm. that are unique, and that they will always look at and get something new out of every single time. I think, you know, the artists here on this program are wonderful examples of those who are putting yeah. themselves into their art.
Joe, it's difficult for many artists to make a living solely from his or her work. But do you find it particularly difficult to market your work on the Cape, or is it's not the case?
I find it extremely hard to market. The unfortunate part of not having a large numbers that follow you is that you really have to go out and hand build your own following, and even though that there is the engine is run really on more landscape oriented pieces, more not contemporary art particularly. So I find it a little difficult to find the market. It is, but it's not unlike the way that we work anyways. It's very much like it is normally, and mm-hmm. I can explain that a little bit. It's just the associations that we've made between Carl, myself, Jackie Reeves, and the small group of very contemporary artists that we have in the Middle Cape. We basically bounce things off of each other. So when we make moves, we kind of make moves as a group. There's larger, you have better success in numbers as you do instead of individuals. So we handle each other as a group, and then we also go out as individuals. So so it has helped in the marketing aspect.
Yeah, that's interesting. Carl, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, yes, Joe's absolutely right. There is a big support system going on with the contemporary artist. We go to each other's shows, go to each other's openings, see who's showing where, who's making inroads, just watching people blossom. You know, like Richard Neal, for an example, was one artist that, you know, he always did very strong work. And then all of a sudden, he just blossomed into something that is extraordinary. And I saw the same thing with Joe Diggs. And I told Joe just a couple of years ago, I said, Joe, you're a better painter than I am at this point. And he said, no, I'm not. We argued about that. But what I saw in him was just the fruits of his work just coming together to just show something that was just polished and different and unique and just totally creative and skillful in terms of craftsmanship.
You've reminded me of an idea I keep coming back to, and I'm determined when I get back to the office I'm going to do this. First of all, let me just say to the landscape artists out there and the seascape artists, I love your work.
I honestly do.
I'm not knocking the more traditional art. But I have seen wonderful artists leave the Cape because they have felt so isolated and so unappreciated. Michael Ornstein comes to mind. He moved back to L.A. after living in Kituat for some time. I don't know if this is the case with Orfeo Fabri, but I think, you know, we see him from time to time. He lives in Hyannis, but I never see him at gatherings. Rarely see him out there with other artists. I think the key in many cases to feeling fulfilled and happy and successful and hopeful as an artist, despite the challenges, is the support system you're talking
mm-hmm.
about,
yeah.
is
Absolutely.
Being in the company of other artists who can teach you, whom you can teach. And I've been wanting to have a sort of fish out of water group, you know, the artists who aren't necessarily linked to a support mm-hmm. system, and somehow get them involved in one at the Cultural Center. I'm in a writer's group. I don't know what I'd do without that writer's group. I think we need to build a stronger network for those who are producing great work but are very much isolated.
Yeah. Joe, any thoughts before we let you go?
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for just having me on. I think that just having these kind of forums is what helps push the engine. So thank you very much, and continued success, and go with the contemporary art. Support your local right. artists.
Joe Diggs, painter living in Osterville. Thanks for joining us, Joe. We appreciate it. And again, we'll have links up on our website to the artists we talked with this morning so you can check out their work, and we encourage you to check out their work. We are talking about the experiences of artists of color on the Cape and Islands. In studio with us, Lauren Wolk, Associate Director of the Cultural Center of Cape Cod. Also with us, Carl Lopes, a painter and visual arts director at Barnstable High School. And also joining us, Robin Joyce Miller, retired art teacher from New York City. She's also an artist, author, and poet. She is a self-described Wash Ashore, who recently begun to spend more time at her second home in Marston's Mill. Robin, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You've spent a lot of time on the Cape, yet you've made some pretty strong connections here. So thanks in part, I guess, to your work as an artist. Tell us more about your work and then how you found your way to the Zion Union Heritage Museum in Hyannis.
Well, as you said, I was a teacher. As an African-American, I did not always feel good about being African-American growing up during the Civil Rights Movement. And I started this work, mixed media collage, narrative quilts, telling our history. And I found out that since by telling the history of African-Americans, it made me feel prouder of who I am. And so when I first came here, I had a book. Once I retired, my husband and I did a book together. I did the art. My husband and I both did the poetry. So the poems go along with the historical quilt narrative pieces. When I came here, my first thought was, how do I fit in to the Cape? And I decided that since we would be here in the summer, I would go to different libraries so that I could talk about my book and do some author kinds of book signings and things like that. When I went to the Hyannis Library, they said to me, well, we do our programs through the Zion Union Heritage Museum. So they actually made the phone call for me and called John Reed. And that was really, that was a lovely thing. And so I went over, John asked me to come over. And in time, he looked at my work and before I knew it, he invited me to do an exhibit at the museum. That was my introduction to coming. And I didn't even know how I'd feel connected. Immediately now, I was connected to the Cape in some way artistically. When I got there, in fact, before I got there, there was Carl Lopes calling me. He heard from John that I was going to be there, looked up my art, and contacted me and said, I'm really interested in meeting you and seeing your art and inviting you to my home. So my husband and I and some friends went to Carl's house. He showed me his art. It was a lovely introduction to the Cape and art. I'm here because of Carl Lopes. Mm-hmm. Carl has made that connection for me, inviting me to his school to do an exhibit and just making me aware of the art. So even before when we were talking about the connections, being you must be connected. Mm. That connection is important. Otherwise, I was just coming here and importing my friends from New York. Right. But now, all of a sudden, I feel a part of the energy on the Cape.
So that this exhibit we're talking about was called Rhythms of a Faithful Journey, Verses from Slavery to Presidency.
Right.
So describe the reactions that folks had to your work as they came in to
see. Well, I'll be honest with you. I can't say what the reaction would be from people on the Cape. Mm-hmm. Because in the Zion Museum, what we had was we had tourists. So the tourists were African-American people coming from Detroit, Chicago, Georgia, Louisiana, you know. So they're looking at my African-American art. And their questions, though, they loved it. You know, so the reaction was wonderful. But this is coming from African-American people who don't live on the Cape. Right. So I really can't speak to what people on the Cape would feel about my art. But the people coming from outside the Cape, what they really wanted to see in the museum was art that told about African Americans on the Cape. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting. And that sparked my first piece that I did here on the Cape, which was a Cape Verdean piece, mm-hmm. because I don't know enough about Cape Verdeans. And New Yorkers, many of us don't know about Cape Verdeans. So mm-hmm. I decided to do some research, and I've done one piece now about this Cape Verdean, you know, historical, because that's what I like to
do.
Yeah,
history, yeah.
Well, I just made a connection here. You had, maybe still have, a show at Barnstable High School, correct?
It was there okay. the month before last.
All right. Now I know why I know you. Mm-hmm. It's because I went to the symphony mm-hmm. at the high school, and a woman named Joan Shostak, who is a senior who's always at the center. And let's face it, she's white. I'm white. We're people of color, too. It's just the white color. And she said, you have got to come see this exhibit. You have got, this is a blue blood Yankee type older woman. And she said, this is going to blow you away. And she dragged me across the lobby to your show.
Wow.
And we went through it. It was
so now you know what the Cape
that's my, well, that's why I'm telling you. Yeah. And I immediately wrote down your name. That's why I know you without having known you. I said, we've got to have you at the center.
Well, that's
and
wonderful.
So I'm telling you from two people at least, and my mother was there with me. So that's three. Beautiful, beautiful work. Very evocative. And like I said, my favorite artist is what? Is art that tells stories and teaches me something.
Right. Robin, you mentioned that you go into Carl's classroom sometimes. If there's one message you hope to convey about your work, what is it?
That we all have a story to tell, mm-hmm. and our story is important. And our art is a way of expressing it. What I found wonderful that Carl did was have students look at my art and write poetry. And then they saw something in my art that they made a connection to, and they express their feelings. Art is expression. So there's many ways that we respond to art, that we connect to art, and having people connect in poetry and bringing themselves into someone else's piece is a wonderful way to experience it. So I'm hoping that when people look at my art, that's what they'll do. And I talked to the students about, when they wrote to me about how my art impacted them, I talked about something that I heard on Oprah, which is it's important, the three S's in life was survival, success, and significance. Mm-hmm. And that you want to do something in your life that makes you significant. And that's what I'm hoping that my art does, and me as a person, I create art that's significant. And so that's why my pieces, even though when I first came here and got my house, the first thing I did was put Cape Cod art in my home. Okay, I said, okay, I need the seagulls and the New England churches. And so I did some pieces in my home because I was renting it out. And I did not think that people, well, first of all, it is not about my culture in the house that I was renting at the time. Mm-hmm. It was about Cape Cod.
Right.
I have to say that when Robin came to the high school, it was very significant for my students because prior to her coming in, we had looked at her artwork in our gallery, and we researched the Harlem Renaissance and the artwork coming out of the 1920s, New York City, Harlem. And we also talked a lot about slavery and what it was like to be an African-American back in the 1800s. And when Robin came here, they had a great historical background. And then they had also written poetry, too, which responded to her work. So it was a very much a give and take between my students and Robin, the artist.
Right. So you were a teacher in New York City.
Absolutely.
How did your experience with your students, particularly helping those students, especially those of color, find their voice?
Well, first of all, my school was a unique school because my school was the world.
Ah.
I had students in the Bronx from every continent. So what I felt was important. The Harlem Renaissance, for example, was never taught to me in school. As an artist, it was important for me to help every child. We had Asian students from all the different Asian countries, African students. For me, it was about culture speaking to all of us. And so, but I wanted to bring in African American history because it was never taught to me and make everyone feel proud. So I did Asian art in the classroom. We did everything. I didn't see myself as a visual arts teacher as much as a cultural arts teacher. So I brought literature into the classroom, poetry, music. So if we're doing Asian art, we listen to Asian music. We're doing Brazilian art, we listen to Brazilian music. Mm. So it was that kind of thing. Mm. So I'm really about peace and harmony. And my first writings from the classroom, I was R.J. Scribbles, by the way. I'm introducing myself. Hi, I'm R.J. Scribbles as well. And so I did a whole peace and racial harmony. And my early art was cartoon art because I'm a self-taught artist. And I was already a special education teacher when I became an artist. So I'm unlike many of the artists who were trained as artists. I became an artist after and evolved. So it's just... So I bring in something different into the mix.
Sounds good. We're going to shift gears a little bit here to the literary arts. Of course, Lauren, this is we're home to a number of writers, creative writers, poets, essayists. What kinds of work does the Cultural Center do around the literary arts?
Well, when I first started at the Cultural Center shortly after it opened and learned the motto was All the Arts for All of Us, I said, well, you better believe that includes literature because I'm a novelist and poet. And of course, they agreed, but I made it my mission to make sure that was a reality. Not that they wouldn't have, but, you know, it takes a writer to really put her heart and soul into the mission to involve the literary arts, which are so often overlooked.
Right.
We have had many poetry readings. Joe Gavea, who is a wonderful Latino poet, and Barry Hellman from Wellfleet came to me several years ago and asked if they could do a monthly open mic with a feature. So we've been doing that. Mm. We just concluded it this fall. We do poetry workshops from time to time, and it's my mission in 2014 to have those frequently and affordably, and I've already lined up several. We do an annual poetry competition, national and regional. We do lots of writing with the youth at risk in our Rise and Shine program.
Yeah, we've had those kids on. They're amazing.
Yeah, they really are. They hear the word poetry and they go, oh, God, never. You know, I'm not not at all interested. And then you go, well, do you like rap?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and we make the connections between poetry and other forms of art and just, you know, forms of expression. So I think we have a very strong literary program at the center.
All right. Joining us on the phone, we have literary artist Dorita Davis, an accomplished poet, fiction writer, and science editor of Cape Verdean Heritage. Good morning, Dorita.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Tell us more about your writing. What are some of the things that inspire or interest you to write about?
Let's see. Well, currently I'm working on a novel, and the novel is about, well, it was inspired by Sweet Daddy Grace, who is a minister that actually started in Wareham, and he built this franchise, I'd call it, of churches called the United House of Prayer for All People. There are a lot of those churches that are still in operation, still standing, and Daddy Grace passed away in 1960, but his legacy lives on. There's a church in New Bedford. Those are some of those that are local. There are others in Savannah, Georgia, and in North Carolina, and all over the United States. I was inspired by him because he was such a larger-than-life character or person that I just wanted to search more and think, you know, how does someone like this come to be? So my novel is a fictional story with a character who is very much like the original Daddy Grace, set in more contemporary times, and but with that same magical energy. The way I stumbled across this topic was my project beforehand is a collection of poems about Cape Verdean and Cape Verdean American culture and history, and that series led me to archives where I was digging around in the New Bedford Free and Public Library, and Rhode Island College has a fantastic collection of Cape Verdean history and culture, and in the digging around is when I stumbled across information about Daddy Grace.
Yeah.
Well, then I asked my family, who is from New Bedford. My mom grew up in New Bedford, and I have so many cousins and aunts and uncles who live out there, and they're like, yeah, Daddy Grace. Sometimes we would pop in his church, and they're always a lot of fun. The services had great music and great food, and so I just kept asking more and more people about it and became fascinated. So it was sort of a offshoot from the Cape Verdean poems, which I think more people who know my work know about because that's the finished project.
Exactly.
Whereas the novel is still very much in progress, and I haven't.
And you work in Woods Hole as a science editor, as you mentioned, and you've mentioned off there that there are times that you are likely the only black person in the village of Woods Hole. So how do you think living here has influenced your writing?
I guess. In a situation like that, it highlights things that maybe you wouldn't be paying as much attention to. So it only made me more keenly aware of my ethnic background. And, you know, it's something that is different from other people who are around me. So I have a stronger appreciation for it.
Yeah.
I suppose that has found its way into my work.
Do you have a poem you want to share with us?
Sure. Let's see. Maybe I'll read from the Cape Verdean poem, since that's what we're talking about right now. So this poem I wrote during a trip to the Cape Verde Islands. I was on the island of Brava, where my grandfather was born. And it begins with an epigraph from Daryl Bourke, who's a poet that I admire. The epigraph is, "Heaven is an idea. It is attainable daily." The title is Vista from the Schoolhouse Steps. If heaven is achievable today, it is in these two girls at the schoolhouse steps, braiding and unbraiding hair. The gray cobblestone path and brown wall of rough rock before them are forgotten, along with this whitewashed house of emigrantes, its bright green shutters closed to a tilled stretch of dirt, dotted with the even red scrawling through the branches of hibiscus trees. The two girls bend away from this, fold their bare feet beneath them. One curves her shoulder and neck over the younger girl, her small fingers smoothing and folding softness into the head in her lap.
Very nice. Jerita Davis, poet, fiction writer, and science editor. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Sure, thank you.
Okay, appreciate that. And we have a call from Chris calling from East Dennis. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
I'm calling just to let your artists know and Laura know that the effect that you have is so far reaching, you can't possibly know. And I'm listening to your show this morning as a result of the fact that I was drawn to the Cultural Center because my grandson's a special needs kid, and he participated in a program there, and his picture was being exhibited. And that got us there in the first place, and since then we've been back a number of times, always impressed with what we see, always find something to talk about. And you just don't know the impact that you're having because you probably don't hear often from people who walk out and come back quietly.
Right.
Oh, thank you, Chris. That's good. That's really
Chris,
good to
thanks
hear.
For sharing that because, as you're saying, Robin, sometimes, you know, you're not there or Carl, as people are walking through and reacting to your artwork, so it's hard to know sometimes.
Well, it's also interesting because I am now, having heard about the exhibit and just listening to that wonderful last poem, I'm going to be down there just walk through and see what's going on.
Great.
So it opens up different vistas to people, too, and that's important.
Yeah. Chris, thanks so much for calling. We appreciate that.
Okay.
We have another teacher, retired teacher, joining us. Janice Frame is a mixed media artist and retired art instructor at the Martha's Vineyard High School. She joins us on the phone. Good morning, Janice.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. So you've spent the last 30 years teaching art, and we've been saying throughout this hour, art is a form of self-expression. I imagine teaching art isn't simply teaching technique. Can you explain how you help your students find their inspiration and direction?
Well, what I try to do with each of my classes is, first of all, build a really strong technical foundation. They start out in that first year really learning how to draw and how to see and how to use color. And then the next step up is how to draw the figure and understand what the human figure looks like. And sometimes we put in their animals and landscape as well. But I think once they get that foundation, they can really, really take off and get into concepts and really express their point of view. And I think that has to come from their culture. I think that the cultural aspect of anybody's expression has to come through. We can have an assignment on that last level, that is, say, we've had something about anger, say, and, you know, somebody from Brazil is going to have a different point of view from somebody who comes from Ireland, let's say, or Jamaica, or myself, you know, who comes from the U.S. and was trained basically in a historical black college and university. So I have my point of view. And I think that the most important thing is that they find that cultural identity and they speak it with truth. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether people really love it or like it. It's just that it's their truth. And that's the piece that I think is really my message to kids.
Mm-hmm. I say, that sounds like, Robin, like what you were doing.
Absolutely. And in fact, in the classroom, when we did that type of thing, it opened up. When one person expressed their culture, it helped everyone to learn and experience and feel the emotions of other people and learn to respect other people. Yeah. I think that's an important part.
Yeah, I think that's really what's important. It doesn't have to look like a real person to be a beautiful piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
It can have a completely different look, a completely different vision, but it's still an expression. Mm-hmm. And that mutual respect is just paramount. It was paramount in my classroom.
Yeah.
We all had to respect each other's space and wherever they came from, you know, mm-hmm. what point of view they're speaking to.
Mm-hmm.
I think what happens is you can present any kind of concept to kids and they can find their truth in it.
Yeah.
So we might do anger one day, we might do ancestors, you know, doing formal portraits of ancestors of theirs that have gone on. Which is really a unique experience because you see so many different kinds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, the ancestry of a lot of kids is not you think it is, and that's always a nice surprise because they have to do their research. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it exposes a lot of their very soul, and that's what really art is.
Mm-hmm.
Janice is also making me think of another aspect of teaching children art, and that is that art can be used for humanitarian reasons. It's just not a decorative thing that's always just placed up on a wall and looks pretty. One of the projects that we've been working on at Barnstable High School for the last 7 years is called the Memory Project, where we get portraits, photographs of orphan children in third world countries. Usually it's South America. Last year, I believe it was Vietnam. And we send off 40-some-odd portraits that our advanced students do. And actually, at Barnstable High School, we're the number one school in the U.S. for sending the most amount of portraits around the world for this humanitarian purpose.
Wow. Janice, let's talk about your art. Describe what your art, what you do.
Well, you have to understand that my undergraduate work was at Fisk University, a historical black college and university, and I'm five generations of Fiskites. Mm. So I've been steeped in the importance of my culture. I've always come from that point of view, and so I really had a lot of respect and fascination, quite frankly, with not only drawing and painting, but things like the body adornment of the African diaspora. When I saw the Maasai men and the Maasai women doing their thing, it just took my breath away.
Mm.
And the scholars of Timbuktu and all their beautiful shrouded head wraps that they wear, I just really got attached to that. And so I started a line of African dolls. And the dolls really were well received. I've been doing them now for about 25 years and show them primarily at Zeta Cousins Gallery in Oak Bluffs. But they're all over the world.
Hmm.
The Clintons have two in their collection. Bill and Hillary Clinton have two, and little Dorothy West had one that she absolutely loved. So that cultural aspect of Africa and all the cultures in Africa have just the color and the symbolism and the adornment. It just takes my breath away.
Yeah.
So that's basically what the dolls were like. I did a line of Muslims. I did a line of kings and queens. And then I did a line of musicians and ordinary folk, basket women, you know, doing their basketry or whatever talent that they had. And so I did for quite a long time. And then they kind of went away, actually. They just kind of went away. They left me. And I started back on what I was trained to do, which is drawing and painting. And most of my things are mixed media. And I'd say 90% of them have imagery of African people in them. And they are, they're not photoreal, but they're more, it's a combination of the expression and the photorealism. I just finished a show this past summer using heavy watercolor and mixed that with graphite, which is just pencil drawing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all on Maasai people, of course, and they really were very well received. Mm. So my stuff is probably more mixed media.
Yeah,
and you know, who knows what'll pop out next? I mean, you know,
that's the beauty of being an artist. But Janice, the Vineyard has a large seasonal population of African Americans. I imagine that in comparison to the Cape, it's easier for an artist of color to exhibit and sell their work on the Vineyard. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
We have a really strong community of people that really, not necessarily, we do have a strong community of artists, but, and there's some residents, but we have a large supportive community, especially in the summer. Zita Cousin, who's been there for 30 years, like I said, has really taken a step, giant leap forward in terms of promoting African art. It is the go-to place on the Vineyard. She's had Jonathan Green and Paul Goodnight, and Michael, a lot of these, you know, artists that are prolific, I mean, have been out there.
Yeah.
And so she's been so supportive and very on point when it comes to exposing, and as well as young visual artists. I mean, she has young artists that come through her. So, yeah, we really have an incredible support system, as well as the Anglo galleries. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they are very supportive as well. Yeah. Zita's is just happens to be focused primarily on, you know, African American artists, but
yeah,
Robin, all of the galleries have been open.
Yeah, Robin.
Janice, I totally agree. Last summer, I, as an African American, I sold my art in Martha's Vineyard in the summer. And it was at the Harlem Fine Arts Show.
Yes.
And so that is where I always thought about that would be the place to, in coming to the Cape, I thought about more being able to sell my art in Martha's Vineyard, because that's how I even learned about the Cape. All my summers were spent, more of my summers were in Martha's Vineyard, because that's where the African-American population is.
And you went to Marston's Mills.
And I went, and I ended up in Marston's Mills, which I love.
Now, the Harlem show is relatively new.
Yes.
But this stuff goes back, you know, 30, 35 years with Zita.
Yeah. Oh, no. And I've been to every time I come, because I started coming in the early 90s. So and I would go to Zita's. Oh, and Myrna Morris. I did a show with her in New York. Yeah. So, and I visited Myrna. So that I do know, you can't be African American and be into the arts and not know Cousin Rose.
It's the spot.
Yeah.
We're lucky.
Very much so.
I'm thrilled to know that there's so many. See, being on the island, you know, you're isolated, right? But I am so inspired by all these other voices that I hear that are on Cape that I'm just like, you know, ready to.
Yeah. Janice, you got to come on over here and check it out.
Absolutely.
Janice Frame Mixed.
Now that I am retired.
That's right. You'll have more time. Janice Frame, mixed media artist and retired art instructor from Martha's Vineyard High School. Thanks for joining us, Janice. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All righty.
Bye now.
We are talking about the experience and work of artists of color. We've touched on the visual arts, the literary, art education. Another important facet of the arts, of course, is music. And perhaps surprisingly, one of the more popular forms is jazz music. And to talk more about jazz on the Cape and her experiences being a Black female jazz vocalist is Charisse Bino from Orleans. Good morning, Charisse.
Hi, good morning.
You grew up on Cape Cod, right? You grew up here. So how did you get started singing jazz?
Actually, my mother works in insurance, and she had a client who's 86-year-old piano player, and he'd played at the Yacht Club. He's played at every club on Cape and really well-known, and I guess she harassed him for years and was like, you got to hear my daughter sing, you got to hear my daughter sing, and he's like, no, you know, I'm too old to be taking on any new students, and he was actually hosting an open mic night at the Harvest Gallery Wine Bar in Dennis, and I went in and I sang an old Nat King Cole song. I think it was Mona Lisa or Smile or something like that, and he was, you know, really impressed that someone so young had known the tune and was impressed that I could actually sing.
Mm.
So after that, he had invited me back to his home studio in Dennis. And, you know, had given me a few other songs that I could sing and put in my key. And this is Bob Hayes, of course, and he and I have been working together ever since and kind of changed his mind about working with Yeah, working with the new students. So.
Now, you left the Cape for a while. You were living in Oakland, California, trying to make it there as a jazz vocalist, but it was a struggle. And wasn't until you were returned here to the Cape that you really made a name for yourself, right? So are you surprised by how the Cape has embraced jazz?
I am, yeah. I mean, in Oakland, I mean, certainly there are a lot more clubs and, you know, opportunities to get into music and sort of, you know, a bigger space, but here on the Cape, there are so many jazz appreciators and so many great jazz musicians that for some reason, it just kind of, I had a really great, time of getting this music project going, and people who came to hear us really enjoyed it and were enthusiastic and followed us, you know, to whatever we were doing next. And a lot of the people who are in their, you know, 70s and 80s who remember this music growing up and during the wartime, and, you know, come up to you and tell you stories about, you know, how they met their love and how this song, you know, reminds them of that time. And it's really kind of...
Yeah, that music can bring you right back to the moment, can't it?
Well, exactly.
Yeah. And you attended school, as you mentioned, here in the Cape. Did you find the school system supportive of your interest in the arts?
I felt a little bit lost, to be honest. I feel like I had a voice, but it wasn't really recognized, and I don't know if that's because you spent so little time in music class, and even though there was a chorus class, I felt like there wasn't that much fostering of talent, or, you know, I just felt kind of lost in
Yeah, Carl, because you're still in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So tell us what you think some of the issues that are facing today's young artists.
Well, I don't think the issues are much different than they were years ago. You know, it's just it's a struggle in the sense of you just have to be passionate about what you're doing. You have to really make sure, whether it's music or whether it's the visual arts, that you love and totally embrace what you're all about, your craft. Because you have to put in so much time to develop your craft that if you don't love what you're doing, you're going to fall away from it and not be a very successful artist. So I think our students these days run into that same trap where, you know, they're trying their best and they're not sure if this is the way to go. And there might be somebody in their family that's saying, well, you know, it's going to be tough making a living as an artist.
Right.
And they end up going in a different direction. And sometimes they come back around and say, no, I really have to follow my heart and become that artist that I need to be.
Yeah, Lauren?
Well, the young people we've been working with are very, very honest. And most recently I was with a bunch of them. And we were talking about intolerance and bravery and courage and the arts and, you know, You do have to put your heart out there. You have to put your heart into your work for it to be any good. But that's a risky proposition. And the way these kids put it was that the other kids who are so judgmental are the deterrent to really putting your heart into something because you'll get stomped on if someone's cruel about it. And one of them said, you know, I'd like to take all the judgmental kids and put them in a box and ship them off the Cape because I would try more things and I would really put it out there if I wasn't so afraid of getting smacked around. So we're here talking about tolerance and tolerance, feeling whether we belong or not. Being an artist is a risky thing. It really
is. Tough, yeah. And Cerise, you just past weekend performed a Black Women in Jazz concert at the Cultural Center. You honored the lives and work of such jazz greats as Billie Holiday and Sarah Vaughan, two of my favorites. How have these women inspired you? Just got about a minute or so left.
Sure. Well, actually, we're going to do that concert again.
Oh, good. I have a chance to see it.
February, so which I think is fitting. I think it's just someone that I can connect with. You know, they are so emotional when you hear the music, especially Billie Holiday. And you can connect with that emotion when you hear them sing. And it puts you in that place so that when I go and perform, I kind of try and figure out, you know, how she may have been feeling or what are the lyrics of the song are saying, and then kind of recreating that emotion for myself. And I think that really adds to the performance when you can emotionally connect to the song the way these women did.
Absolutely.
And I think that conveys over to the audience, and then they are kind of locked into that emotion with you. I mean, in the best case scenario, if you can move your audience in that way, that's really when the magic happens.
Exactly. Sharif Bynoe, jazz vocalist from Orleans, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. If you're interested to learn more about the artists and their work, we'll have a list of the guests and links to their websites at our website, capeandislands.org. Just about 30 seconds left. I think one of the interesting things that's come out of this conversation this morning is this supportive network that's happening here on the Cape. It's wonderful. Now we have to get the islands and the South Coast, everybody in this together, right?
Well, it doesn't matter. Black, white, yellow, green, everybody needs support. Especially in the arts, too.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Robin Joyce Miller, retired art teacher from New York City, an artist, author, and poet. Thank you for being here this morning, Robin.
It was absolutely a pleasure.
Carl Lopes, a painter and the visual arts director at Barnstable High School. Thank you.
Thank you, Mindy.
And Lauren Wolk from the Cape Cod Cultural Center. Thanks, Lauren, for being here with us as well. And thanks to the other artists who joined us this morning, Joe Diggs, Jerita Davis, Janice Frame, and Cherise Bynoe. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Amy Vince produces The Point. With assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.